Good morning. I've been asked to give a report, an update on the work in Philadelphia, but there's something I'd like to say before that is, you know, we've all come to worship God here today and not to, you know, lift up Joe Hamm and his family for being in Philadelphia. So I want us to keep the proper perspective on what we're doing here, and that is, this is God's work in Philadelphia, and we're privileged to have a part of it, but I want us to keep that first and foremost, as this is what God is doing through his people in another part of the country, and it's not about me, and it's not about my family. I want to start off broad, and then we'll move and we'll talk about Philly towards the latter part of the presentation. The first question to ask is, why move to the city? I grew up, if you don't know, in Marion County, Alabama, small town, Hamilton, Alabama, and moving to the city was something that you didn't do. That's where everybody went to, you know, to fall into trouble, you know, to get off the beaten path and to just go and do what they wanted to do. And so I had to wrestle with this a long time. I never thought I would go and live in another part of the country, especially the Northeast. I was a Southern born. I was quite happy living in the South. And so I've had to wrestle with this and think, why would we move to the city? Sometimes we may have a bias against cities. Some of you may have lived in cities before. Some of you may have family members who have gone off and lived in cities, and some of them may have fallen away from the Lord. And so this is something that I've had to struggle with. Well, first of all, I want us to consider Paul and his missionary journeys. Many of you are familiar with this, you've studied this in your Bible classes. Where did Paul go in the first century? Paul went to the largest cities in the Roman world oftentimes. These cities had great influence. Obviously, Rome. Rome had about a million people at that time, it's believed. They didn't have accurate census data. But other large cities would have been Alexandria, but Antioch was also one of the largest cities. Ephesus and Corinth was a large trading center at that time. These are places where Paul went. Paul went to cities. And there's strategic advantages.
So I want to talk about, I want to make sure they can see.
Oh.
What's going on?
Okay, there we go.
We're a slave to the technology sometimes. Thank you, brother. I would have just kept going. I never looked behind. Keep going forward. So here's a map of those major cities I was talking about. Rome, Corinth, Ephesus, Antioch. And these are the largest cities in the Roman Empire at that time, with the exception of Alexandria, which was, I think, the second largest city in the Roman Empire at that time. But why are they important? They're a melting pot of cultures. You go to Birmingham, Alabama, or Huntsville, you see a lot of people from all over the world there, people going to university, you see a lot of immigrants in the city. Now, I've given a couple scriptures here. Why was it that Aquila and Priscilla were in Corinth? Well, it's because Caesar had kicked the Jews out of Rome. And so different political and different environmental situations caused people to move. In a city, you have a whole mixture of people. In Corinth, because it was a port city, you had merchants, sailors. We also read about prison guards, slaves, all different cross-sections of society hearing the gospel, as well as religious leaders. You may be familiar with Crispus, the synagogue leader. Different people that we come in contact with, like Erastus, the city treasurer, people of Caesar's own household. These are the kind of people that mingle in close proximity in a city. And also, influence often radiates from urban centers. I'll give you an example. If you wanted to go see a play, well, if you want to go see the latest plays, you may have to travel to New York City. But if you wanted to go see a play or get something that was maybe cultural, where would you go? You would go to Birmingham, or you might drive up to Huntsville, because these are places, or maybe even Atlanta. These are places that are cultural centers, economic centers, and also political centers. And religious centers, religious ideas spread out from cities as well. For example, the church in Ephesus, we may know about Paul's work in Ephesus, but later we read about the seven churches of Asia that were surrounding the town of Ephesus. I'll show you that on a map. We have Ephesus here, and then we have those seven churches of Asia surrounding in the countryside around Ephesus. Now, why did that happen? We're not explicitly told. But I would not be surprised if the people from these cities would often travel to Ephesus. Maybe they went there for their education. Maybe they went there to get jobs. Perhaps some of you here, when you were younger, went to Birmingham, went to Huntsville. Maybe you still commute there, but maybe you moved off to a city And then you came back and you brought different ideas back. You brought different things that you do that you learned about in the city. And these things were probably happening in the New Testament as well. I suspect that many people went to Ephesus and then took those ideas back home and shared the gospel with their families. Down here near Laodicea would also be the city of Colossae, where Paul wrote to the Colossians and Hierapolis. There's two things I want to talk about that bring us to the city of Philadelphia. And one is the urban, what I call the Great Migration. It's the urbanization of the world, which is a big idea. But also, there's a lot of immigrants who are coming to our cities. And these two things are working together, I think. They're helping us to spread the gospel in Philadelphia. And it's a great opportunity, I think, for us to take the gospel to all nations. It used to be that to take the gospel to all nations, you actually had to go to all nations. But all nations now are coming to the major cities of the world. And if you go to any university campus, all nations are there. Our universities are loved by people from all over the world. And so all the nations are coming to get educated in our schools, in our cities. And we have a great opportunity to reach people from all nations there. In Acts chapter 17, when Paul is preaching, he says that God has appointed the boundaries of all the nations, and he is never very far from any of them, that they might reach and grope for him. And the idea I want to play in your head is that God has always used migrations for his glory. I'll come back to this in a second. But what's going on with the population of the world is right now we have about 7.2 billion people estimated. There's not good census data in many parts of the world. And what's interesting about this data is 54% of these people are living in urban areas. You might not appreciate that, but that is a huge percentage of the world's population that actually lives in a city, and it continues to grow. The United Nations estimates that in the next 100 years, 90% of people will be living in urban areas. Now, this is a huge difference from 1950. In 1950, there were 746 million people living in urban areas. And just a few years ago, there's about 4 billion people. So this is what, I don't think this is by chance. I mean, I think God is in control of history, and he's behind everything. But what we've seen in the world is a huge population boom. For example, when my grandfather was born, he was born in 1928, there was 2 billion people in the world. When I was born in the late 70s, I was born in 78, so about double in two generations. And now we're at 7 billion and we're on our way to 9 billion. Now, we don't know if this will continue. The reason that population has continued to grow like this is because of commercialized farming and improvements in technology and fossil fuels that drive production of land and those sorts of things. But this is the state of the world right now. All these people, here's another graph to give you some perspective. In world history, we've just seen this huge population spike over the last couple hundred years. And where are all these people going? Where are all these people living? Well, they're moving to cities. At a rate of about 1 million people move to a city every week. 1 million people a week are moving to cities from rural areas. Because there's jobs there, there's educational opportunities there. It gives the promise of a better way of life. And we've started developing what we call these mega cities in the world that have over 10 million people. Just 2 years ago, I was doing this research and there were 34. And then the other day when I looked again, there was now 47 of these mega cities. The number of cities with over 1 million people is 536. Just to give you some idea, here's the top 10 largest cities in the world. Tokyo, 38 million. Shanghai, 34 million. I think China has the most of these megacities. We only have one of them. Our megacity is New York City, with 24 million people. But we do have a lot of large cities. And God, I think, is using these migrations for his glory. If we look in, we don't have a prophet to tell us what God is doing today, but when we look back in history, God always used migrations for his glory. Think of the Tower of Babel. When God told people to go forth and multiply and they didn't do it, and they built a tower, he scattered their languages and sent them to all the corners of the earth. And then later, he brought the people out of Exodus. He brought his people out of Exodus so that he could demonstrate his glory and put them in the land of Canaan, so they would be a light to all the nations. And then when he wanted to punish those people, he sent them to Babylon. And then from Babylon, he sent some of them back. But as you know, many of them were dispersed across the known Roman and Greek world, and they formed synagogues there. And God used that because when the gospel spread from Jerusalem and Judea into all the world, all the Roman world, where did Paul and the others go and preach first? They preached in the synagogues that were already there. The Jews had already been dispersed. So God was using this for his glory. Now, in our country, we have these huge population belts. You're in one. You probably know this. But in between Huntsville and Birmingham and Atlanta, you have this little population area right here, which you're in. And that stretches all the way up into the Carolinas. And there's one in the Midwest. There's one down here in Texas. You know, there's one in Southern California, Northern California. And we're in the middle of one that stretches from Washington, D.C. up to Boston. And when you look at the city, the countries nationally, here's the largest metropolitan areas. You got New York City, and of course Los Angeles and Chicago. And depending on the reports that you look at, we're in the fourth or the fifth largest metropolitan area, Philadelphia is. And it's because we're in between Washington, D.C. and New York. To look at that differently, you see this, you see Birmingham here, you see the population hump right there, and then one in Atlanta. And then up in the northeast there, there's that huge population spike all the way from Washington, D.C. up to Boston. It's a huge area. In fact, there's 20% of the whole U.S. population that lives in this area, and it's only 2% of the landmass. And so it's a very densely populated area. In 2011, my family and I, we were working with a congregation up in Wallingford, Connecticut. I've talked to some people, they've been there before. And I was invited to come, Jeff and Scott Smeltzer, I don't know if you know the Smeltzer family, but they had started the work in Philadelphia and they invited me to come and join them in 2015. Now, Philadelphia is located, as I said before, between New York City and D.C. And it is a more expensive place to live than here, but comparatively speaking, from when you consider the cost of living in New York City or the cost of living in Boston, it's one of the lower cost of living places up in the Northeast. And so what many immigrants do when they come, they initially come to Washington, D.C., or they come to New York City because there's huge immigrant communities there. And then as they get more established, many of them are coming to Philadelphia because of that lower cost of living. So that's driving our population growth. The other thing that's driving our population growth is young professionals moving there, because there's a lot of jobs and for young professionals, and the city has tried to cater for young professionals, make it attractive to live there. You may have noticed the same trend here in Alabama, where a lot of more immigrants today, people who are foreign-born than previously. I think Alabama gets a lot of people migrating here from Central and South America. But this is a trend that we need to be aware of as brethren, that the percentage of foreign-born people in our country continues to increase. And I realize that that causes certain problems, and it can be a hot-button political issue, but it's also an opportunity to reach people for the gospel, people who would not otherwise perhaps have heard the gospel. So we are here in Philadelphia between Boston and Washington, D.C., and I just want to ask you, what do you think about when you think of Philadelphia? Now, some people probably think of these things. The Liberty Bell, Independence Hall, maybe the Rocky Steps at the museum. Maybe they think of the Love statue. A lot of people think of cheesesteaks when they think of Philadelphia. And this is pretty much what we knew. We didn't really know much about Philadelphia. We had stopped there one time on our way to Connecticut when we moved there in 2011. And we were deathly afraid of the city. We had a very terrible experience one night. We slept overnight in a Walmart parking lot. People were beating on our windows all night asking for money. We didn't really know much about it. When we started researching it, we realized this is the fifth largest city in the country. There's 1.6 million people in the city, but also when you think of the metropolitan area, it's about 7.2 million. I think the population of Alabama is between 4 and 5 million. Is that correct? Somebody? Maybe. I think that's right. So that gives you some perspective. More people in that city than the whole state of Alabama. Another thing to consider is the racial demographic is very different. Most places in the country, if you look at the percentage of Caucasians or whites, that's the predominant race in most parts of the country. But the blue is Philadelphia. If you look at the top two, the divide between white and African American, Caucasians or whites are the minority in Philadelphia. There's a lot of minority populations. There's a lot of Asian, Indian, people from other parts of the world that are there. We are the minority in Philadelphia. In fact, it has the third largest African-American population, the second largest Puerto Rican population, and a lot of other places from around the world. A shocking statistic I found was that there's 450,000 college students, which presents a huge opportunity. There's a lot of universities in there. In fact, we meet on the campus of a university, and I'll show you that in just a moment. But that is driving a lot of the population growth. People may move. You may have heard of people moving to Washington, D.C., for an internship, a young person, or going to New York City to make it big, and they find out the cost of living is really high. Maybe they have a chance to visit Philadelphia, and they end up moving there. When we moved to Philadelphia, there was no work that was actually going on in downtown. There was a church out in Exton, Pennsylvania, where Jeff Smeltzer preaches. That's about an hour to our west. And on the north side of the city, in the northern suburbs, there's another church that a man named James Baker has been preaching there for about 20 or 25 years. But there was no work down in the city. And so Jeff and Scott Smeltzer decided to start a work there along with David Rafe, who I know some of you know. And they invited me to come there. And this is what West Philadelphia looks like. It's not a very wealthy part of the city. It's one of the first areas where a lot of the workers and the poorer people, the working class people, would have lived in the early days of the city. Many parts of it's dilapidated. It's a traditional inner city neighborhood that you might see if you're watching TV and all the stereotypes of an inner city. And so there was a lot of safety concerns in the beginning. What they initially did is they rented a storefront at the west side of the transportation line, which is the subway system, called 69th Street Station, and they rented a little small office building storefront in 2014. And it was the second floor. It was a little dance studio, and it was a very tight space. It was hideous colors, mirrors on the wall. It was just not an ideal worship space, but we made it work. That's what the church could afford, and they had challenges there as well. You know, it was all cramped up, and you're trying to teach and preach in this little space. And shortly after we got there, the landlord kicked us out of the building. He wanted to renovate it and turn it into a Hindu grocery store, and so we had no place to meet. And winter was coming on, and so we all crammed into our basement. We had this little row house. And my wife and I were talking about this last night. This was a really tough time for the history of the congregation, because we got kicked out of the place we were going to rent. The winter was coming on. We had no place to meet. But we were really proud of everybody. Everybody really huddled together, and this experience was really formative for the group. We really got a lot closer as a group. And the next summer, we started looking for a place and thought, where could we go that would be strategically located? Because we had people from all over the city that were having to drive to the west part of the city. And a lot of the contacts we were making were in the heart of the city. And we went everywhere. My wife and I were trying to find places. Nobody wanted to rent to a religious organization. No one wanted to rent to a church. And if they would rent to us, it was going to be prohibitively expensive. Our only option was to try to find what I would call an event space, you know, something that you rent just for Sunday from the worship times. No dedicated space where you could come during the week. We just could not afford that in the city. And so eventually we found a place down here on the campus of UPenn, very closely located to public transit. And this is where we're meeting today. It's the oldest student union building in the country. It's a historical building. It's a wonderful opportunity for us. And I can tell you the longer story, but I don't have time to do that, about how it was God's providence that led us here, because no one else would rent to us, and providentially we found somebody who would open up the door for us to meet here. It was very unexpected, because this is an Ivy League school. It's a very liberal institution, but as I was saying last night to some people, it's liberal in the classical sense of the word, which anything goes. And so when we told them that we wanted to worship there as a church, they said, okay, do whatever you want to do. They weren't offended, in other words. And so we don't have the space on Wednesday nights. We meet at another location on Wednesday nights, but this is where we are on Sunday mornings at 10 o'clock. And here's the inside. The room holds about 100 people. That's the capacity, but we normally have about 40 to 50 people in the room on Sundays. They don't set up the room to full capacity. Let me talk about a couple of challenges. These are some things that you could... the next couple of slides, you can be praying for us as you're thinking about the work there. But if you ever decided to move to a city, these are some of the challenges that we faced, because I'm from a small town of about 3,000 people. I'd lived in Atlanta for a number of years, but I just wasn't prepared for what I had found in Philadelphia. The first thing that shocked us when we moved there was the high cost of living and the smaller living spaces. So what you can afford to get and what you actually can afford to buy, everyone is cramped in. You know, in the South, you know, most of us, or many of us, if you're an older generation, this doesn't apply. But my generation, I'm 40 years old. Many people my age grew up, if they didn't have too many kids in the family, you had your own bedroom. You might have had your own bathroom, okay? I know if you're an older generation, people shared. In the Northeast, everybody shares. You know, we have all five of our kids in one bedroom. We have one bathroom. You walk out the steps, you hit the sidewalk. You don't hit a front yard. You hit the street. There's no backyard. There's like a little 10x10 lot. And this is the first thing that you may find shocking if you move to a city. No place for the kids to play. You have to go to a park and work, you know, walk to a park to do that. The other challenge that we find is, you know, this being in the city but not of the city. There's a lot of distractions in the city. I would want to caution somebody if they're a young person and they're not married of going to the city. You need to really have to have your head on your shoulders to go to the city when you're young and unmarried. You have to have a strong foundation of faith. Because we have a lot of people who move to the city and end up losing their faith. They get distracted. It's not uncommon for someone to call us and tell us that their son or their daughter or their grandchild is moving to the city and they would like for us to reach out to them. But I'll tell you right there, that's the bad sign. Because if the child themselves are not reaching out to us, but it's their parents that are reaching out to us, we know that it's their parents that are more concerned about their faith than they are oftentimes. So being in the city and not of the city. There's also safety concerns. When you live in the city, I was telling Billy this last night. I mean, we hear gunshots every week within a couple blocks. And about once a month, somebody gets shot, you know, somewhere within a couple blocks of where we are. Now, a lot of this happens, you know, after midnight. A lot of it is maybe drug-related. A lot of this can be avoided just by using good street smarts and not going out too late at night. But these are safety concerns. And the real challenge for us being there and wanting to help the community is there's a fight that goes on internally with us. You know, you want to withdraw to safety. You want to, you know, close. You want to come home and close the doors and you want to play in the back little 10x10 lot instead of playing on the front porch on the street where your neighbors can see you. Those sorts of things. And so I say, you know, the challenge is hide or help. Hide or help is always a challenge for us. We want to help, but we don't want to put our family in danger and get hurt. But there's often still many opportunities for us to help. Like we became what's called the block captains, and we help clean up the street, and we've met a lot of the kids, help the kids fix their bikes and stuff during the summertime, and that's given us opportunities. The other distraction that you can run into is many people move to the city, and they just get so caught up in either the culture. There's so many things to do in the city. There's always something going on. They get caught up in their family, get caught up in their career, and become very inward-focused is a challenge. But there's also some challenges that faces collectively as a congregation. Retaining members, people either moving away or falling away, has been a challenge because of those challenges that I talked about right here. All of these things, if people don't have a strong faith, or when they're converted, if they don't establish a strong faith, they can get quickly swept back into the world. Another problem that we have are these, what I would call, different barriers: cultural barriers, racial barriers, and socioeconomic barriers. In Philadelphia, it's very common for there to be, and I think perhaps in the South as well, maybe this is everywhere, but there's a lot of racial tension, especially in Philadelphia, because of a lot of the history that's there. Black Panther movement, a lot of history of violence between police and the citizens. We live in a minority neighborhood where we're the minority, and there's kind of a lot of hostility that's developed over the year between blacks and whites. And so for us to, you know, be accepted in that culture has been a challenge. But also, we want the congregation eventually to have the same demographic makeup as the city. You know, if you live in a city that is 50% African American and 50% white, well, the church should look the same way. If there's a lot of other ethnic minorities in the area, well, the church should look the same way, because the gospel is colorblind. But unfortunately, and I'm sure you find this everywhere, is a lot of the churches in Philadelphia are either all black, or all white, or all Chinese church, or all Korean church. And so trying to break down those barriers continues to be an issue. And also the lack of leadership. You may be surprised to know this, but not many people retire to Philadelphia. And so we don't really have, I think that's always going to be a challenge of growing and developing leaders who will stay in the city because the higher cost of living. This is the same challenge that they would have in Boston and New York and any large city in the Northeast and many other parts of the country is people, when they get established or when they retire, they move out of the city. So there's a small number of men. The lack of leadership in the congregation is a challenge. I mentioned before, no permanent meeting space. This means no classrooms. We have one space where we meet, and all the children, everybody are there together. Now, hopefully, maybe that will improve in the future. Maybe we can afford to make some other accommodations. But for the moment, everyone's together, and that presents its own challenges. Parking. You walked over there. You walked 2 miles to get to us from your hotel. But many people, when they visit us, they're very surprised. We take for granted here in the South that you can just get there maybe 5 or 10 minutes early and find a convenient spot right outside and just walk right in. Well, in Philadelphia, if you're going to drive, you need to get there maybe 30 minutes early to find a parking spot within a couple blocks and then walk there. The travel distances are farther, and transportation's an issue. In our neighborhood, I think 60 to 65% of people don't even have access to a car. That's shocking, isn't it? People walk everywhere. They take public transit. So this is a different way of life. But I don't, my wife said, and she pointed this out to me, she said, don't make them feel sorry for us up there. We actually enjoy being in Philadelphia, but I just wanted to be real about some of the challenges so you could, you know, pray for us about these things. This is a recent picture of the group. There's several families that are missing from this. But we have a wonderful congregation there. The Lord has really blessed us. Some wonderful people striving to serve God in this difficult environment. When we think about outreach, how are we going to reach all these lost people? I'd like to share with you a couple things that have been helpful for us over the last couple years. The thing that's led us the most, helped us meet the most contacts, I would say, are the public Bible studies that we hold. Every week, just about every night of the week, we have some kind of public Bible study. It used to be that you could have a gospel meeting. What it's like here in Coleman, but it used to be that you could have a gospel meeting somewhere, and because there wasn't all the entertainment and other options, people would come. Maybe even other denominations would come to your gospel meeting. But now, oftentimes you hold a gospel meeting and you don't really have that many visitors, or maybe you have visitors, other brethren from the other parts of the other churches in the community. So what we decided to do is we're going to have these Bible studies in public. And I think they do this in maybe you do it here in Coleman, but this is something that I think happened more recently over the last 5 or 10 years, maybe 15 years. We're doing the same thing. The church in Atlanta, where I was worshiping at Embry Hills before, David Maxim was preaching there, and a lot of the things that we do are a lot of the things we did in Atlanta when I was worshiping there at Embry Hills. Every night of the week, we go to like a Wendy's or a Chick-fil-A or a Panera Bread, any place that has free refills. And I'll tell you why we do that. It's because those are the kind of places that they're not trying to kick you out. Those are the places that they're fine with customers hanging around. So if you're looking for a place like this and a place has free Wi-Fi or free refills, that's a good place to maybe have a Bible study. We meet a lot of people there. We go there every week at the same time. And we go there with a couple brethren. And whether we meet anybody there or not, we're not discouraged because we have our own agenda. We're studying through a book of the Bible. And people see us there. We make friends with the workers. A lot of the regulars will come by and we'll see that. And then we also promote these on social media. We create Facebook events for these, a recurring Facebook event, and we'll advertise those on Facebook. Some of the brethren take pictures and put them on Instagram, other social media, meetup.com. And we meet a lot of people that way. People come, they're looking for something to do. They're looking for a Bible study. And if you were to type in Philly Bible study, we would be the first hit. You know, that's what we wanted. We wanted to be anybody looking for a Bible study in Philadelphia. We want them to find us. And that's what we work hard trying to do. Next, newspaper ads. We run a newspaper ad every week. Actually, three. I think it comes out three times a week. The least effective for us, but we still do it, is putting up posters and handing out flyers. We still do this, but I'm just telling you, we get most of our contacts from actually being in a location every week and meeting people physically at those Bible studies. We also have a website. There's a lot of other, I was telling Billy and some of the others last night, there's a lot of One Cup Churches of Christ in the area that we've become friends with, and we've been able to have some influence with there. And then also our personal community involvement. The next couple slides, I'm going to show you some of the things. These are some pictures of the public Bible studies. Here's another one at Wendy's. That one was at Panera Bread. Here's a kid's Bible class. Instead of, in the South, I know, I don't know if you do this, but some churches do have vacation Bible school or something where they have a program for kids in the summer. We took this to the park. Some of the ladies organized this, my wife and some of the others. We get a pop-up tent. We go to a local park where kids are playing in a big crowd on a Saturday. And every Saturday during the summer for like 6 to 8 weeks, we take them through the whole story of the Bible from Genesis to Revelation and bring them all the way to Jesus and tell them about Jesus. And the kids love it. There's also soccer going on at this park on Saturdays. And so sometimes their siblings will be playing soccer and the kids and their other kids will join before or after soccer. And it's worked out well. We met some people that way. And then also, instead of gospel meetings, what we've learned is nobody knows what a gospel meeting is in Philadelphia. You say, gospel meeting, what's that? So we say, Bible lectures. And they oh, Bible lectures. So we started having these Bible lectures periodically on different topics, and we'll advertise those. The ladies for the last 4 years have been doing this as well, just ladies-only events. And it's been very popular with the ladies, not only the ladies in our congregation, but there's not a lot of churches in the Northeast, and opportunities for ladies to get together and encourage each other are few and far between. And so when we have these, we normally have ladies driving from across Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, and they'll come together and encourage one another. But it's also been a great way for us to meet visitors in the community. Here's an example of Facebook events that we would promote our Bible studies. These are just recurring events. People can find it when they're scrolling through Facebook. And by the way, if you're interested in this, you can target your ads. You may know this already. You can target your ads based on all this demographic data. So what we do is we target people who are in Philadelphia from the ages of like 18 to, whatever. I don't think we target as much by age. But anybody who's either liked something or shown any interest in anything religious on Facebook, we target these ads to them, and it's been very effective for us. We also have a website on meetup.com where we post our Bible studies. There's a picture of our ad. And our ad's very simple. It's a very inexpensive ad. It just says, wanted people to study the Bible, and our phone number and our website. And a lot of people call us just from that very simple ad. We're always driving, and all the advertising we do, whether it be on Facebook or other social media or our flyers or the newspaper ads, we're always targeting them to our website, and when they come to our website, we ask them for their email address. And that's the first thing they get hit up with, and so we can keep in contact with, so we have this growing email list of people that we can contact. Let me skip through these. These are just us putting up some flyers. We started last summer an internship program, so for 10 weeks during the summer, we invite a young man up to the city for 10 weeks. Last summer it was Alexander Newman. He grew up in Atlanta. And he just finished up last month at FC, and he's going to be working with David Maxson at the church in Northport in Tuscaloosa, so he's going to start preaching there and more like a full-time second preacher arrangement. But this summer we have another guy coming with us, so if you know of any guys who might be interested in coming up and spending a summer with me, let me know. Let me skip through this. Oh, this is where we are and versus where David is. So on the left-hand side is where me, my family live, and also Fiona's parents. And then up there, we wanted to kind of be at different areas. We wanted to be strategically located where we could divide and conquer, spread out the contacts and work, because it takes so long to get across the city. David moved to the other end of the transportation line up there, so we're both close to public transit, just at different ends of the transportation line. And let me show you my house, and I'll just wrap up here in the next few seconds. In 2017, we bought this little row home, which is a bank foreclosure we were able to find in West Philadelphia. Need a lot of work on it, but this is where we live. Allows us to have people into our home. One of our, you may have read in my report, one of our favorite things to do on a Wednesday night is to have some of the young singles into our home, people who are studying or working in the city. And this home has been a blessing, not only to our family, but also to the work, because we're able to, because we don't have a permanent space, it's been nice to have a place where we can invite people in that's in the city, that's close to public transit, where people could walk to if they needed to. And the last picture I'll show you is this is our lawn. We don't really have a lawn. We have a back lot, but it doesn't keep us from having people over and having a good time. This is what you get creative. When you live in the city, you get creative. You throw up a pop-up tent and a folding table, and you have a picnic, and it works out nicely. This is my family walking to worship. One of the things I want to leave you with, and as I close here, is I'm often reminded of this verse. When I was growing up, like I told you, I had this aversion to going to the city. But now, as I think more about it, we need to have compassion for the city. Why? Because that's where people are. More people are in cities, so we need to have compassion for the lost people and where the lost people are going. I reminded this verse in Matthew chapter 9. Seeing the people, he, Jesus, felt compassion for them because they were distressed and dispirited like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Therefore, beseech the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest." There's a lot of opportunity in cities. That's why people move there. There's also a lot of poverty in cities. And there's a lot of spiritual poverty in the cities. And so if I could ask you to pray for the work, not only our work, but just there's a lot of people across this country and the world who are moving to cities and trying to take the gospel to people who are moving there. So let's pray for this work. I appreciate you guys so much for your concern that you've already shown. I've told my wife, you know, seems like every month we're getting a handwritten note or a card from someone here. You've shown great interest in our work. I see our report back there at the back of the auditorium. And so I just want to encourage you. The work that you're doing is making a difference. The sacrifices that you're making are making a difference. And pray for us. Pray for us that we'll use the support you send us in a way that would be honoring to God, in a way that would spread his gospel and be used, that we would be good stewards of that, that God would use us as an instrument for good and for his glory and not our own. Thank you.